whole grains, such as barley, brown rice, buckwheat, millet, oats, popcorn, quinoa, rye, teff, whole wheat pasta, and wild rice. In terms of serving sizes, a half cup of hot cereal or cooked grains, pasta, or corn kernels, 1 cup of cold cereal, 1 tortilla or 1 slice of bread, or half of a bagel, or half of an English muffin, or 3 cups of popcorn would be 1 serving, and I recommend 3 servings a day. Consistent with recommendations from leading cancer and heart disease authorities, I recommend at least 3 servings a day of whole grains. Harvard University's preeminent twin nutrition studies, the Harvard Health Study and the Health Professionals Follow-Up Study, have so far accumulated nearly 3 million person-years of data. A 2015 analysis found that people who eat more whole grains tend to live significantly longer lives independent of other dietary and lifestyle factors. No surprise, given that whole grains appear to reduce the risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and stroke. Eating more whole grains could save the lives of more than 1 million people around the world every year. There are so many nutrition claims floating around the internet that lack scientific backing, but a few especially persistent memes directly contradict the available evidence. While I see books, websites, articles, and blogs parroting claims like grains are inflammatory, even whole grains, I can't help but wonder what alternative dimension the authors call home. Pick your indicator of inflammation. Take C-reactive protein, CRP, for example. CRP levels rise within the body in response to inflammatory insults and are therefore used as a screening test for systemic inflammation. Each daily serving of whole grains is estimated to reduce CRP concentrations by approximately 7%. Furthermore, there's a whole alphabet soup of inflammation markers that appear to be improved by whole grains. ALT, GGT, interleukin 6, interleukin 8, 10, 18, PIA1, tumor necrosis factor alpha, TNFR2, whole blood viscosity, and erythrocyte filtration. Or, as presented in less technical terms in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, quote, whole grain intake cools down inflammation, unquote. Even excluding heart disease and cancer, habitual whole grain intake is linked to a significantly lower risk of dying from inflammatory diseases. What about gluten? You've probably heard about an autoimmune disorder called celiac disease, in which the consumption of gluten causes adverse reactions, including gastrointestinal problems. Gluten is a group of proteins found in certain grains, including wheat, barley, and rye. Celiac disease is relatively rare, though, affecting less than 1% of the population. For the more than 99% of the rest of us who don't have the disorder, is gluten okay, or indeed health-promoting like other plant proteins? In 1980, researchers in England reported a series of women suffering from chronic diarrhea who were cured by a gluten-free diet, yet none of the women had evidence of celiac disease. They appeared to have some sort of non-celiac gluten sensitivity. At the time, the medical profession expressed skepticism that there was such a thing, and even now there are experts who question its existence. In fact, doctors commonly referred their patients claiming non-celiac gluten sensitivity to psychiatrists because they were believed to have some underlying mental illness. The medical profession has a history of dismissing diseases as existing, you know, just in your head. Examples of these include PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, ulcerative colitis, migraines, ulcers, asthma, Parkinson's, Lyme disease, and multiple sclerosis. Despite resistance from the prevailing medical community, each of those conditions has subsequently been confirmed as a legitimate disorder. On the flip side, the internet is rife with unsubstantiated claims about gluten-free diets that have spilled over into the popular press, making gluten the diet villain du jour. And of course, the gluten-free processed food industry, today worth billions, has a financial interest in the public's confusion. Whenever there's that much money at stake, it's hard to trust anyone. So as always, stick to the science. And what sort of evidence is there for the existence of a condition presumed to be so widespread? The first double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled gluten challenge was published in 2011. patients complaining of irritable bowel-type symptoms who claimed they felt better on a gluten-free diet despite not having celiac disease were tested to see if they could tell if bread and muffins they were given contained gluten or were gluten-free. All of the subjects started out gluten-free and symptom-free for 2 weeks, and then were challenged with one of two types of bread and muffins. Even those who ate the gluten-free placebo products felt worse, meaning they started out on a gluten-free diet and continued on a gluten-free diet, yet they reported feeling crampy and bloated. This is what's called a nocebo effect. The placebo effect takes place when you give patients something useless and they feel better. The nocebo effect occurs when you give someone something harmless and they feel worse. Nevertheless, the patients who received actual gluten felt even worse, so the researchers concluded that non-celiac gluten intolerance may indeed exist. However, this was a small study, and even though the researchers claimed the gluten-free products were indistinguishable from those containing gluten, it's possible the patients were able to tell which foods were which. So, in 2012, Italian researchers created a double-blinded test with 920 patients diagnosed with non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Each were given capsules filled with either wheat flour or a placebo powder. More than two-thirds failed the test. Those on the placebo got worse, or those on the wheat felt better. But for those who passed, there was a clear benefit to staying on the wheat-free diet, confirming the existence of non-celiac wheat sensitivity. Now, note they're talking about wheat sensitivity, though not gluten sensitivity. In other words, gluten itself might not be causing gut symptoms at all. Most people who are sensitive to wheat are sensitive to a variety of other foods, too. For example, two-thirds of people with wheat sensitivity have also been found to be sensitive to cow's milk protein. Eggs appears to be the next leading culprit. If you put people on a diet low in common triggers of irritable bowel symptoms and then challenge them with gluten, there's no effect, calling into question the existence of non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Interestingly, despite being informed that avoiding gluten was apparently not helping their gut symptoms, many participants opted to continue following a gluten-free diet, as they subjectively just described feeling better. This led the researchers to wonder if avoiding gluten might improve the mood of those with wheat sensitivity, and indeed, short-term exposure to gluten appeared to induce feelings of depression in these patients. Regardless of whether non-celiac gluten sensitivity is a disease of the mind or the gut, it's no longer considered a condition that can be dismissed. The next question, then, is what percentage of the population should avoid wheat and other gluten-containing grains? About 1 in 1,000 may have an allergy to wheat, and nearly 1 in 100 has celiac disease, which appears to be on the rise. But still, there's less than 1 in 10,000 chance that an American will be diagnosed with celiac disease in a given year. Our best estimate for the prevalence of wheat sensitivity is in the same general range as celiac disease, slightly higher than 1%. So only about 2% of the population appears to have a problem with wheat. But that's potentially millions of people that may have been suffering for years and could have been cured by simple dietary means, yet were unrecognized and not helped by the medical profession until recently. For the 98% of people who don't have wheat issues, there's no evidence to suggest that following a gluten-free diet has any benefits. In fact, there's some evidence suggesting a gluten-free diet may adversely affect gut health in people without celiac disease, wheat sensitivity, or wheat allergy. A month on a gluten-free diet was found to adversely affect gut flora and immune function, potentially setting up those on gluten-free diets for an overgrowth of harmful bacteria in their intestines. This is due, ironically, to the beneficial effects of the very components wheat-sensitive individuals have problems with, such as the FODMAP fructans that act as prebiotics and feed your good bacteria, or the gluten itself, which may boost immune function. Less than a week of added gluten protein may significantly increase natural killer cell activity, which could be expected to improve the body's ability to fight cancer and viral infections. The greatest threat gluten-free diets may pose, though, is that they may undermine our ability to diagnose actual celiac disease, a much more serious form of wheat intolerance. Doctors diagnose celiac by looking for inflammation caused by gluten in celiac sufferers. But if patients complaining of digestive problems come to the doctor having already eliminated much of the gluten in their diets, physicians might miss the disease. Why would getting a formal diagnosis matter if you're already on a gluten-free diet? Well, first of all, it's a genetic disease, so you'll want to know to test the family. More significantly, though, many people on so-called gluten-free diets are not actually on truly gluten-free diets. Even 20 parts per million can be toxic to someone with actual celiac. Sometimes even foods labeled gluten-free may not be safe for celiac sufferers. What's the best course of action to take if you suspect you might be sensitive to gluten? First off, do not go on a gluten-free diet. If you suffer from chronic irritable bowel-type symptoms, such as bloating, abdominal pain, irregular bowel habits, ask your doctor about getting a formal evaluation for celiac disease. If you have celiac, then go on a strict gluten-free diet. If you don't have the disease, the current recommendation is that you should first try a healthier diet that includes more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans, all the while avoiding processed foods. The reason people may feel better on a gluten-free diet, and therefore conclude they have a problem with gluten, is because they've suddenly stopped eating so much fast food and other processed junk. In other words, if you eat a deep-fried Twinkie and your stomach aches, it may not be the gluten. If a healthy diet doesn't help, I suggest you try to rule out other causes of chronic gastrointestinal distress. When researchers have studied PWOGs, that's what they're called in the medical literature, people who avoid wheat and or gluten, PWAWGS, PWOGs, they found that about one-third of them didn't appear to have gluten sensitivity at all, but instead had other conditions, like an overgrowth of bacteria in their small intestines, were fructose or lactose intolerant, or had a neuromuscular disorder like gastroparesis or pelvic floor dysfunction. After each of these is ruled out as well, then I'd suggest people suffering from chronic suspicious symptoms try a gluten-free diet. No current data suggests that the general public should try to avoid gluten, but for those with celiac disease, a wheat allergy, or wheat sensitivity diagnosis, gluten-free diets can be a lifesaver. Eat whole within minutes. Eating whole grains should be more than just swapping out white bread for whole wheat and white rice for brown. There's a wonderful universe of whole grains out there. You may have tried quinoa, but what about kaniwa or fonio? Even wild rice, which is not actually even rice, may not sound as wild as the grain called frika. Have fun. Try some amaranth, millet, sorghum, or teff to expand the amber waves of your horizon. Buckwheat is my mom's favorite. As with vegetables, use color to make decisions at the grocery store. If you have a choice, pick red quinoa over white quinoa, blue corn over yellow, and yellow corn over white. Beyond just comparing antioxidant content, there's experimental evidence to suggest that pigmented rice, red, purple, or black, has benefits over brown. For example, in addition to having about 5 times more antioxidants, colored rice varieties have shown greater anti-allergy activity in vitro, as well as superior anti-cancer effects against breast cancer and leukemia cells. For convenience's sake, there are a number of quick-cooking grains. Amaranth, millet, regular oats, quinoa, and teff can all be prepared in less than 20 minutes. For grains that take longer, such as barley, farro, or steel-cut oats, consider cooking a big pot in advance on the weekend so you can simply reheat for your meals throughout the week. Or get a rice cooker. You can buy one for less than $20. Whole wheat pasta cooks in about 10 minutes. Improved production technologies have created a new generation of whole grain pastas that are no longer have the kind of rough and mealy texture of yesteryear. My favorite brand is Bio Nature because of its delicious nutty taste. Try it with my 8-checkmark pesto. In the PDF, you'll find a recipe for Dr. Greger's 8-checkmark pesto, which involves combining in a food processor 2 cups of fresh basil leaves, 1/4 cup of freshly toasted walnuts, 2 cloves of fresh garlic, 1/4 of a peeled lemon, 1/4 teaspoon of lemon zest, 1/4 inch of fresh turmeric root or 1/4 teaspoon of turmeric powder, 1/4 cup of pinto beans, 1/4 cup of water or liquid from the bean can, and 1 tablespoon of white miso with pepper to taste. Blend until smooth. Scoop onto 1.5 cups of cooked whole grain pasta. Popcorn is a whole grain that takes less than 5 minutes to prepare. A hot air popper is another inexpensive, useful appliance. There's an endless variety of savory, sweet, and spicy toppings you can use. I like the combination of chlorella and nutritional yeast. My family, the green color earned it the name zombie corn. By lightly misting ear pop popcorn with a spray bottle, you can get dry seasonings to stick. I like to spritz with balsamic vinegar. Be sure to stay away from artificial butter flavorings, though. Originally, we thought the artificial butter flavor chemical diacetyl was just an occupational health hazard, resulting in the deaths of workers who handled the chemical from a condition known as popcorn lung. But now we know that consumers are also at risk, given a case series of serious lung disease thought to be caused by butter-flavored microwave popcorn consumption. There are even one-minute whole grain options, fully pre-cooked bowls and pouches of brown rice and quinoa that can be microwaved and don't even need to be refrigerated, just heat and eat. The 5-to-1 rule. If you buy packaged grain products, anything labeled on the front with words like multigrain, stone ground, 100% wheat, cracked wheat, 7-grain, or bran, is usually not a whole grain product. They're trying to distract you from the fact that they're using refined grains. Here, color may not help. Ingredients like raisin juice concentrate are used to darken white bread to make it look healthier. Even if the first word in the ingredient list is whole, the rest of the ingredients could be junk. I suggest using the 5-to-1 rule. When buying healthier, whole grain products, look at the nutrition facts label on the package and see if the ratio of grams of carbohydrates to grams of dietary fiber is 5 or less, and you'll see a figure in the PDF. For example, let's see if 100% whole wheat Wonder Bread passes the test. Per serving, the package lists 30 grams of carbohydrates and 3 grams of fiber. 30 divided by 3 is 10. Well, 10 is more than 5, so the 100% whole wheat Wonder Bread goes back on the shelf, even though technically it's a whole grain product. Compare that to Ezekiel bread, a sprouted grain bread based on the biblical verse. It has 15 grams of carbohydrates and 3 grams of fiber, and just like that, passes the test. So do Ezekiel English muffins, which taste great with fruit-only jam and nut butter. Though the science on the potential benefits of sprouted grains is still in its infancy, available data looks promising. Apply the same 5-to-1 rule to breakfast cereals, another grocery category that can lull you into believing nearly everything is healthy. Multigrain Cheerios, for example, sounds good, but has a ratio over 7, and then it just goes downhill from there with Frosted Cheerios and Fruity Cheerios, which have carbohydrate-to-fiber ratios that exceed 10. Compare that with Uncle Sam's cereal, sliding in with a ratio under 4. Others that make the cut include some no-added-sugar puffed grain cereals, like puffed barley. But the healthiest whole grains are the least processed, the so-called intact grains. Even though wheat berries, shredded wheat, whole wheat flour, and puffed wheat cereal may all be 100% whole wheat, they're handled by the body very differently. When grains are ground into flour or puffed, they're digested more rapidly and more completely. This increases their glycemic index and leaves fewer leftovers for the friendly flora down in your colon. Researchers have experimented with this by splitting people into two groups. One group ate nuts, seeds, and beans more or less intact. The other group ate the same exact foods, but ground into flours and pastes. The first group ate nuts instead of nut butters, whole chickpeas instead of hummus, and muesli instead of muesli ground into like a cream of wheat texture. Note that both groups were eating whole foods, just in different forms. What happened? The intact whole grain group doubled their stool size, which was significantly greater than that of the ground whole grain group, even though they're eating the same foods in the same quantities. How is that possible? There is so much more left over for your gut flora to eat when you eat your grains intact. Few people realize that the bulk of stool is not undigested food, but pure bacteria, trillions and trillions of bacteria. That may be why you get an increase of nearly 2 ounces of stool for every 1 ounce of fiber you eat. That's not just water weight. You're feeding your good bacteria so they can be fruitful and multiply. As the study demonstrated, when you eat grains intact, even if you chew your food thoroughly, pieces of whole seeds and grains transport starch and other goodies all the way down to your colon for your flora to feast on. But when grains are unnaturally processed into flour, almost all the starch is digested in the small intestine, and you end up starving your microbial self. When that happens regularly, it can result in dysbiosis, an imbalance in which bad bacteria can take over and increase your susceptibility to inflammatory diseases or colon cancer. The moral of the story, whole grains are great, but intact whole grains may be even better. Instead of puffed brown rice cereal, how about just brown rice? Brown rice for breakfast may sound weird, but warm bowls of grains are traditional breakfast foods in many parts of the world. There are savory versions, or you can sweeten it up with fresh frozen dried or freeze-dried berries. There are online sites where you can buy freeze-dried strawberries in bulk for less than a dollar a cup. Oats. Oatmeal, of course, is the classic whole grain breakfast. Just as cruciferous vegetables and flax seeds harbor beneficial compounds found in abundance nowhere else, oats contain a unique class of anti-inflammatory compounds called avenanthamides. They're thought to be responsible in part for the fresh odor and flavor of oats, as well as the ability of oatmeal lotion to relieve skin itching and irritation. Studies on human skin fragments from plastic surgery that were subjected to inflammatory chemicals reveal that oatmeal extract can suppress inflammation, so much that oatmeal now appears to be the treatment of choice for certain serious chemotherapy-induced skin rashes. Ironically, two of the cancer cell lines found to be resistant to that type of chemotherapy were found to be sensitive to avenanthamides in vitro, suggesting that people should try applying oatmeal to their insides as well. Oatmeal is more than just a whole grain. Oatmeal is my go-to breakfast when I travel. If there isn't a nearby Starbucks where I can pick up some oatmeal, I prepare instant oatmeal with dried fruit in the coffee maker in my hotel room. At home, if you want to spice up your oatmeal routine, Google savory oatmeal for all sorts of interesting dishes involving sautéed mushrooms, herbs, spinach, curry, roasted vegetables, you name it. The Daily Dozen calls on you to eat 3 servings of whole grains a day. This may seem like a lot, but when you look at the actual size of those recommended servings, it'd be a snap for you to succeed. I mean, just one pasta dish at a typical Italian restaurant may average the equivalent of 6 servings. A morning oatmeal habit is a great way to kickstart your day, and then there are a variety of quick-cooking whole grains that serve as convenient, filling ways to fight chronic disease risk all day long.